Hello everybody, James here, and it's Ask Dutch Anything, and that means that you can ask the Dutchman himself. You already put me off with that can floating in. Yes, the big high spot of this episode is indeed going to be, after all those weeks of threatening to, Dutch Mantel is actually going to try Woo Energy, Ric Flair's energy drink. What's that flavour you've got there? I sent you three.
It is dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit. So he's going to try the dragon fruits energy drink at the end, so stay tuned for that. But let's do the plugs first, and we're going to do them very, very quickly. Number one, we're on Pro Wrestling Tees now. We've got about four different designs out there, and there's more to come soon as well.
They're over there. I can't get them right now.
Yeah, don't worry about that, people. There'll be an image on the screen, I'm sure, to show what people, what they look like. Dutch has diplomas he is selling. Go to dirtydutchmantel2ls@gmail.com. They are signed by the Dirty Dutchman and the provost, Zeb Coulter. He has a figure that he may be auctioning off soon. There's also hats that you can get through Dutch himself at dirtydutchmantel2ls@gmail.com. Signed. If the ink will not be absorbed by the hat, of course, and, you know, if the colour, you know, shows up the signature in the ink. I've got Franchise University with Shane Douglas every single Wednesday. New episode every Wednesday, finally. We had a bit of a break of fits and starts for a while, but it's out now. And also on Shane Douglas' official YouTube channel. And I've got books as well, one on The Rock and one on Owen Hart on Amazon. And the links are all in the description of this video and every single video. And every podcast as well. Is there anything else?
Yeah, get ready.
Not quite.
Okay,
we'll save it for the end. He was about to open the can, by the way. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Questions for Dutch at gmail.com. once again, I say this quite a lot, but we're getting between generally 50 and 100 questions in every single week. So if yours isn't asked, then you're in good company, because most people's aren't being asked. But keep sending them in, please. We really appreciate it. We can't do this show without you, so please keep sending them in, the best ones, or the ones that we collectively deem the ones we want to ask to Dutch. This week will be chosen. So, having said that, this is the first... Oh, I'm sorry, there's one more thing as well. Dutch is going to be making his first live appearance in something like, I don't know, 18 months, I guess. May 10th and 11th in Evansville, Indiana, and there'll be Dutch, Jerry Lawler, Superstar, Bill Dundee, Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, Austin Idol, Jimmy Hart. So there's going to be a Memphis reunion as well.
Mm-hmm. At the National Guard Armory, which I'm kind of disappointed in. I thought it would be in the old Evansville Coliseum, but they're revamping it, so we can't be in there. But it will be a good time. I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely, and I think you're going to be the superstar, because people have not seen you out, I mean, you know, in a live setting in quite a while, and plus this podcast has been booming recently, so you'll have made some new fans as well as many from the territory days, I'm sure. But let's ask the first fan question. Questions for Dutch at gmail.com. Kevin B. Now, I threatened to ask this last week, and I remembered for once. There used to be an animated series called The Passion of the Ass, or Vince McMahon's Ass, whatever it was. It was about Vince McMahon's ass. No lie. It is buried on YouTube, but you can find it if you search around. There are two episodes that have been uploaded on other sites. So, are you finally ready to watch this?
Well, I watched a little bit of it.
Oh, you've seen a bit of it already?
I have, but I don't think the fans have, because I never heard of it before. What's his name? Kevin B?
Kevin B, yeah.
Before Mr. Kevin B brought it up. But let's show everybody what he's talking about here.
Okay. I'm going to start the recording now, because you just sat there just amusing yourself just watching what's going on already.
His ass is doing curls, and his arms are doing like reverse curls back. I don't know.
Yeah, he's working on his back, and his posterior is working on its biceps.
Oh. So this is called, what is it called?
Vince McMahon's Ass, or whatever it's called.
Let's so this is an animated series?
It is, that had to be cancelled because it was a rip-off of another cartoon called Assy and McGee. So the only last 2 minutes are a thing. I don't think we're going to watch the entire thing, but... Mr.
McMahon. Oh, my God.
So, for the audio listeners, this is the intro where Vince McMahon's Aris is playing the drums, riding the motorcycle, and folding its arms in the Raw entranceway.
Yes, my ass club. Oh. Well, I'm glad they took that off because I don't think that would have much of a viewing audience.
Do you want to watch the rest of it?
How much we got? 38
so
seconds?
Like, yeah, it's 1 minute 20 left.
Here's the caterer.
Je suis arrive. Here's the carrot soup. Raw seaweed from the shores of Madagascar. Huh? And the best of resistance.
Very mysterious.
Et voila. A tofu turkey stuffed with organic yeast flakes.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the soy getty and meatless balls.
Hey, Veghead, Thanksgiving is about real turkey drippings in real butter, stuffed with real stuffing and real cranberry sauce. None of this vegetarian crap. Why don't you come over here and kiss my Thanksgiving casserole?
Sorry, I can't. Meat's never crossed my lips.
You almost ruined our Thanksgiving. But luckily, I came prepared.
Oh, my God.
Would you eat that?
I don't think I would eat that.
Thanksgiving.
Vince, that is too much. I know you didn't do it, but whoever animated this thing, I think they got some issues, some big, big issues. Oh, my. I've never seen that, never even heard of it.
No?
So what is kiss my... Kiss my ass,
or Vince McMahon's ass, whatever, or the passion of the ass. It's ass based. Is this show?
I can see why that was canceled. It wasn't canceled because of something else. It was canceled because of that, because it was horrible.
You did laugh, though. You did laugh.
Well, I did laugh because it's, but it's not a continual laugh. See, if you showed me the same thing next week, it wouldn't be the. You see it once, you've seen it.
We're going to move on. Now, Kento DiCaprio, Ibaraki, Japan, has written and says, "Hey guys, thank you so much for your podcast. I found it only a month ago, but I've been binge listening your catalogue each day. Thank you very much. This might be a strange question, but hopefully it will be interesting to your listeners as well as potentially helpful to myself. I've been wrestling in Japanese indies for over 10 years, and over time I've taken pride in it and have grown to feel that being a wrestler has become an important part of my personal identity. Getting deeper into my 40s, and with bookings becoming scarce, it is clear that retirement is around the corner. I have dread in accepting this reality, losing a part of myself, or the feeling of being dumped by your first love. Is this common with perhaps especially less accomplished wrestlers when deciding to call it quits? Would you have any advice for someone to be able to retire without regrets? Best regards, and thank you again."
Again, I'm going to go back to that word I used earlier, or on our sister podcast. It's an addiction. This guy, what's his name?
Kento DiCaprio.
All right, Kento. You have an addiction to wrestling and through no fault of your own. I've had people say, yeah, anything wrestling related that they see in the paper or they see anywhere, if they just see the word wrestling, or talk about a talent that they know, they're there. They're going to be there. And yes, I think it is a big of an addiction and hard to get off of as heroin. That's what I think. And if you got it, I don't think there's a cure for it, to tell you the truth. I think, and if you're worried about getting out and going into retirement, well, I think you might need to keep doing it, because apparently you don't depend on it for your livelihood. So just keep doing, stay active in it. It's the only thing I can tell you. It's like, instead of taking heroin, why don't you take some aspirin? I mean, just don't go off of it cold turkey.
Methadone, just work your way down.
Yeah. Don't go fentanyl. Don't do that yet. Especially if it's a colored fentanyl, stay away from it because they've tainted it with something. So, yeah, you have an addiction, and I think you're the one that has to work through that. I can't give you any suggestions on it.
It's a good question, though. It's like retiring without regrets. I mean, you know,
is that what he said?
How would he go about retiring without regrets? I mean, how can one do that if you've not achieved everything you want? Because no one really achieves everything they want to do in wrestling.
But he is. But he's not retiring. You don't quit wrestling. Wrestling quits you. We said that with Mick Foley on the podcast, on the sister podcast, because he didn't quit because he wanted to. He quit because he just really couldn't do it anymore, and he couldn't stay up with it. So that is the same thing as wrestling quits you. And you'll know when it's time. Apparently, from his letter, he doesn't want to quit. So he needs to stay involved in it somehow, some way. Just because you're not in the ring actively performing doesn't mean you can't help. You can put stuff together. Just stay around it. I think you're just do a Vince McMahon. Just make yourself the head of it and just tell everybody to kiss my ass, pal. You can do that. But and anyway, hey, if you tuned in early and you saw the first Vince McMahon little cartoon, that blame that on James. I had nothing to do with it.
Is it still on your mind then? Is it? Do you think does this podcast help you with your wrestling addiction? Because you're not in wrestling, but it's like wrestling adjacent. You talk about it, people listen.
Well, I never had a wrestling addiction. What I had was a money addiction is what I had. I needed money to live. So, and I like talking about it to some people if they're not, you know, I've had people come up and they're very rude sometimes. Like, oh, what'd you ever do? This, that, now, I won't talk to you. And if you want to be nice, I'll talk to you a little bit. But I think there is a fascination about this business that goes behind the fourth wall, and they want to know what goes on. And I don't want to make it seem like ordinary, but it's the same thing that happens in big offices. If you have people jockeying for position, jockeying for a raise, jockeying for a promotion, you want to get ahead of this guy, that lady, it's the same thing. And it has its politics like everything else. But one thing it's not, it's never boring. Never boring because you got to watch what you say and who you say it around, because if the wrong people hear it, you could be in for a little bit of a rough time.
So there you go, Kento. I'm sorry. You will never leave this business without regrets, and you'll probably never leave this business. So that's just how it works, and apparently. We're going to move on. JG Michael, how can a company that has been based around Vince McMahon's extremely idiosyncratic vision for so long recalibrate post-Vince McMahon?
You take what you've given, which WWE has already done, and now they're hotter than the whole time I can ever... I think they're hotter than the even the Attitude Era. I think they got more eyeballs on it. And this, and you can say what you want to about the Vince McMahon scandal and what's her name, Grant? What's your first name, Lauren?
Janelle.
Or Janelle Grant. But it has eyeballs on the company. Now, it's not the best look, but you have a man who's 78 years old. And there's a story there. And I was reading the other day. See, Vince has done so many things. And everybody knows who he is. And I may have brought this up when you're channel surfing. Something you're going to run across WWE at one point. And you may say, oh, what the hell is that? And you may like it or you may not. And then some people absolutely hate it. Some people love it. I was thinking one time, Nashville, Tennessee, I was living there, and I went into the territory. It was on its ass, big time. We would go to the show on Wednesday night, and that's when they ran Nashville. And it was a fairly sized building. You could probably get, I don't know, maybe 800 people in there. They were doing like 100 people. And Randy Savage was there. And we got that territory up to where we were selling out that 800-seat building every Wednesday night, and just me and Savage. Because and I figured out how he did it. All of a sudden, you're channel surfing on TV. Click, click. Oh, go down to Rhodes Furniture. Click, click. Yeah, buy a car here. All of a sudden, you hit, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, and some wild-eyed guy there. And then you go another channel or two, and you went, wait a minute. What was that oh, yeah guy doing? Click, click, and you go back and you watch him. Because where else are you going to get that interview anywhere on TV? You can only get it by watching wrestling. And he captivated their imagination. And then he had a good opponent in me, I hope. And we started doing good business. So, and that's what it is, I think. Did I answer the question or no?
No, not really. Chris from Cherokee County, Georgia. Hey, guys, glad you're back, Dutch. I was watching a confrontation between Dirty Dutch and Gypsy Joe in this clip, and I'm going to tee up the clip in a second, and was curious about something. At 6:55, Dutch slaps the living shit out of poor Gypsy Joe and then proceeds to literally whip his ass with old shoe baby. So the question is after the clip. So we're going to watch the clip first, 1 second. You're just admiring your hair there, Dutch. That's a powerful mullet you had in the
90s. That is.
Cowboy boots.
Yep. Tucked in pants.
Stripes, yeah. Classic.
And a baseball cap backwards.
Yep. Let's play.
You can't go to the bathroom by yourself, you imbecile. Hey, what do you want? Do you want to fight me? You want to wrestle me or something? Is that what you want?
No, Dutch. We want you to get out.
Well, I'm not doing it. And you know why I'm not doing it? It's because after I get in there and kick the crap out of you, they're going to get me for murder. Because I will destroy you. I'm not fighting.
Let me tell you something. I'm 59 years old, and I'm able to take care of myself. I don't need Jerry Lawler. The only thing is my friends.
He's your
you
friend.
Are gonna
well, with friends like
butt.
Him, you don't need any.
I'm
going to
whip your butt.
Can't use a, no, you can't use a microphone butt. Very well, can he?
Let's just get it off. Come on.
Come on.
He's out here stirring.
Lawler, this is not your program. I'm an icon. You're going to show me something. Huh?
Hey, come on. Watch it, Joe.
I laced him there.
Yeah. That's Stacy Carter, isn't it? There we go. So that was a lot of it.
I thought I hit him. I hit him a time or two more, but apparently I didn't.
No, I thought. Yeah, I thought you whipped him a couple of times more. But yeah. So the question is. Did Dutch have enough legitimate control over that whip to where he could work and make it look real good, or did he have to actually lay it in?
Brother, I'm a technician. Of course I had control over the whip because, hey, when I first got the whip, you got to work with it. I've whipped myself more times by accident, and that's when you learn to use the whip. You know what makes, you know, you ever hear a whip go out and it pops?
Yeah.
You know what makes it pop?
It's the, it's like a little rope bit at the end, isn't it?
It's the tip is traveling faster than the speed of sound. And it's what you hear when that whip goes out is a small sonic boom. So, yeah, I could stand there and I could whip somebody, it would pop behind them, which kills the power. Then it wraps around their leg and you can take them down. I got a ring in Memphis one night and I'm going to use my cap as a cheap advertisement. Phil Hickerson had on a cap, baseball cap, and he stood there facing me. I threw the whip out and I couldn't do this again in 100 years. I wanted to pop it right in front of him, but I didn't. I popped it right here, and his cap flew off. The crowd went, ooh. I went, ooh. Bill Hickman went, woo.
He probably went, woo.
But the thing about, and when I slapped Gypsy, I slapped the taste out of his mouth. Because if you knew Gypsy, You had to hit him. I mean, you have to hit him with a fist, but he'd say, oh, come on, lay it in. Hit me, hit me. And you'd hit him. I was in a match with him one time. He said, I was hitting him, and he was beating the crap out of me. And I'd hit him. He'd say, harder. I'd hit him again. Harder. About the third time I hit him, he said, harder. I said, that's as hard as I can hit you. I could have hit him harder. I said, but I knew what was coming, because then he would take over, and then he'd beat the crap out of me some more. No, I'm not doing it. I'm not playing the game. But the harder you hit him, I think he kind of had a little fetish about getting the crap beat out of him, because he didn't care. And I love Joe. But I think he had a tough upbringing. He's Puerto Rican. I don't think he didn't know when he was born, because the birth certificate he got wasn't. And I think he didn't get it till he got to when he's 20 years old or something, but he doesn't know when he was, he didn't know how old he is. So it was kind of, that's when the things were kind of messed up. But I love Joe. He's passed on now, but he left a legacy, that if anybody was ever worked with him, you won't forget him. He has a match with, or he has a run in with, what's that black guy's name that
New Jack
is in that?
We've talked about that one before.
Have we showed that he beats
but
he keeps getting up, and I mean it was a fight. Have you ever seen the New Jack on the scaffold in L.A.?
Yeah, we've seen it. We showed it on an old podcast, in fact, I think.
Oh, my God. So, but watch these guys that want you to beat them up, because then they come back and beat you up. I wasn't a fan of it. But I wasn't a fan of the other way either, because I don't like to work that way.
Very quickly as well, Chris has asked, why did you call the Bullwhip Shoe Baby? Which I don't know. I don't know why you ever came up with that name.
I don't know either. It just popped up one day.
Really?
Somebody said, call it Elmer, or call it this. And I said, nah. I said, call it Shoe Baby. And that's what I did.
There you go. Spencer Yates says, hello, Dutch. With all the insanity going on in or around pro wrestling in the past few weeks, I was wondering, why can't modern wrestlers throw a good punch? Guys like Harley Race, Terry Funk, Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, Shane Douglas, Dustin Rhodes, and even your good friend Ric Flair could all throw a good punch. Do you think it's a lost art? Thank you for the time. Love the show.
Yeah, I think it is a lost art. Hey, did he name me in there throwing a good punch?
Hang on, let me just write it. And Dutch Mantel also. Yes, he did.
Okay. Well, it's like anything else. You have to practice it. And I asked a guy, I said, how do you learn? This is years ago. I said, how do you learn to throw a punch? He said, well, you stand in front of a doorway, and you know the things outside the doorway, or the cover or whatever. He said, you keep throwing at that, and at speed. He says, and when you hurt your fist, you're throwing it too hard. If you can get right there at it, and part of it is throwing it and coming back. See, what you're seeing when you see a wrestler, you're seeing a wannabe, or it could be, stuntman. The only difference between a wrestler and a stuntman is they do their stunts over and over and over again to get them right. Wrestling has one shot at it. If you don't get it right on that one shot, it looks like hell. But you just practice it and practice it. And what they say, practice makes perfect. And that's how you have to do it. And if you hit a guy too hard, he's going to let you know. So.
Have you seen, so NXT this, as we, this is out on Tuesday, so the previous Tuesday's NXT had a very, very notable punch on Dragunov, Ilya Dragunov. Have you seen it or heard about it?
I haven't seen it.
We'll move on. Richard Taylor, I'm from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada, and each fall I go and visit friends and family and pretty much do most of the Ohio River part of Ohio. And every year I discover new things to check out or learn more about the history of the area, things like the world's longest suspension bridge in Wheeling, West Virginia, and then shortly afterwards in Cincinnati, Ohio, and how the events of one region influence the others, etc. My question for Dutch is, what hidden gems did you discover down south during your travels while wrestling that may have required a return trip? And what adventure did you hear about or maybe see from a distance that you never quite got around to circling back to that you wish you could have?
Brother, let me tell you, what's his name?
Richard Taylor.
Richard, in wrestling, we didn't have time to see gems of the countryside. This is what I saw. I saw an interstate and a highway, and I heard the sounds of tires on the pavement. You get there at a building, you walk in, you see a dressing room and a ring and some people. Hopefully you see some people. Then you go back to the dressing room, you take a shower, you get back in the car, you go back. You have no time to check out anything really. And even when you stay over, you can, but I did see some things when I stayed over in Savannah, Georgia, that were very, very interesting. And I enjoyed seeing that. And I went to Paris one time. I said, I want to see the Eiffel Tower. But I went down to it, but I didn't. The only reason I saw the Eiffel Tower is I had an appearance down past it. So we went down there, and on the way back, I told the cab driver, stop. I got to see this. So I got out, me and Swagger, who was over there for the WWE European tour, and I saw it. That's the only way I was going to see the Eiffel Tower is by accident. And I went to Munich once, and I saw the red walls. We've talked about that, James, the red gates that you go in, and red gates are supposed to say, hey, don't go here. This is rated R. But I saw that, and it was, yeah, I didn't have a lot of time for sightseeing. It was get to the matches, do your match, get out, and leave. But I did see Graceland in Memphis. And I actually went in.
Oh, yeah?
Very disappointing.
The house or just the grounds you went in?
No, I went into the house. And then you saw outside where Elvis would walk. But it was really disappointing. It's not really that big of a house, really. You think it'd be like mansion size. It's a pretty big house, but it's nowhere close to a mansion. But I did see that.
Next question. Larry from Alabama says, Paul Heyman made a video where he suggested that the end of Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania possibly could not have been how it was supposed to go. He suggested that Lesnar went into business for himself. Do you have any knowledge of this? Keep up the great work on your videos.
I don't think Lesnar went into business for himself. I think Mark knew what was going to happen. Vince knew what was going to happen. And Lesnar knew what was going to happen. But they really didn't. I don't think Lesnar, this is my critique of it. I don't think Lesnar needed to beat The Undertaker, really. He was already over. And nobody wanted to see The Undertaker lose. He was 21-0 going in the match against Brock Lesnar. And I think it actually turned people off Undertaker a little bit. They wanted to see the streak continue. I did. I mean, there's no beating, to me, beating Undertaker didn't add one bit of heat to Lesnar. Nothing. It just beat him. It's like a team is on this win streak, and all of a sudden a team beats them. Then it's over. It's fleeting. And you can tell by the tape they put out after the match, some people were standing there like, I can't believe it happened. Yeah, but they led them one way, and it was a big match. Lesnar and Undertaker matching up. But if Undertaker had won, it wouldn't have slowed them down one bit. I think they disappointed their fans that night, and he disappointed the ones that took the pay-per-view and bought a ticket.
So no credence to Paul Heyman's conspiracy theory there?
Nah, I've never heard it. Wait a minute. He goes into business for himself against Mark? You know, Mark, let me say this. You know, Lesnar was in the Olympics, and he was an amateur wrestler and all
that.
No.
He was NCAA champion. He never went to the Olympics.
Okay, whatever.
But he was a UFC heavyweight champion. He would have torn Undertaker apart if it was a shoot any day.
No, you don't know that.
Come
you
on.
Don't know that. If Mark had if he'd have straightened one out on Lesnar, he may have been gone. Listen, just because somebody is a good wrestler doesn't mean they can fight, really. Because I guarantee you, when Lesnar fights, he don't fight with fists. He hooks them and takes them down. That's the way he's learned it. But somebody who doesn't know that, and Mark doesn't know that because he's too tall to do it anyway. If he'd have straightened one out, I mean, if he'd have had Dick Murdoch straightened one out, he was known for his punch. Killer Cox, known for his punch. Dick Slater, it only took one punch, and the guy was gone. Now, it may take more than one punch on Lesnar, but he could have possibly gone. But I don't think he went into business for himself. So what Paul is saying is they had a different finish, and Lesnar just changed it.
As best I know.
Makes no sense at all.
I could ask someone about this, and I'd be interested to see what they said. But best I know is that the decision for Brock Lesnar to win was made about 4 hours before match time.
Okay. There's Vince. That was Vince. And, okay, Vince sets Taker down. He says, Mark, get them pants down. He doesn't say that. I'm kidding.
I know they're close. I know Taker and Vince McMahon are close.
They are close. Yeah. Because they just went to Saudi Arabia. Hmm? They were over there. Yeah, they are close.
But not that close.
But no. But he said, this is the best thing for business. Mark's a company guy. He said, okay. Now, he wouldn't have laid down for, I don't know, most anybody else. But with Lesnar, yeah, okay, we can do that. And he got up, and it was kind of sad after that match watching Undertaker leave, because I don't think he went into business for himself. And listen, if he'd have went in business for himself, don't you think we would have heard about it by now? Huh?
Yeah.
So I put no, you like this word, credence. I put no credence in it.
I was going to say, I like that word. Or I said it about 30 seconds ago.
Or is it, you did not say it.
I did say credence, yeah.
Maybe that's where I got, okay.
We're going to move on. Uri and Rusty, hi Dutch and James. I grew up in a tiny town in Norway in the 80s and 90s, and every kid loved the WWF and WCW, including me, and I'm a huge wrestling fan to this day. Does Dutch have a theory / idea on how pro wrestling became such a global giant and why it is such a broad appeal to so many people from all walks of life all across the globe? Thank you and kind regards.
Because they take it down and they're talking right to fans. It's not like a football player or a soccer player goes out there and he says, hey, let me tell you something. I'll come up there in those stands and I'll beat over one of you, you low life, you know. And he attacks the people. So the people, they want to see him get his comeuppance. So they become a fan of the other guy, his opponent. And that's how it's done. Wrestling all over the world. If you took a wrestler, let's say in Norway, who just speaks Norwegian, and puts him in a ring in Japan with a guy that just speaks Japanese, but they speak a universal language, is wrestling. Certain ways you do certain things, certain ways you approach it. So They could not even speak the same language and have a 5 or 10 minute match. And you wouldn't even know the difference. And of course, in Norway, they would do a voiceover in Norwegian, tell you what the guy's saying. So it's not like you're watching something you don't understand. And if they have some good commentary guys that say, oh boy, he really insulted him then and said, told him, hey, do it if you think you can. And now the people know what you're talking about. Yeah, it is a universal language, and it's over all over the world. So I think you could take it. You could take it to the moon, maybe. And you could, what if you had a sellout on the moon with a bunch of little moon people running around? Crazy, huh?
Well, they'd be jumping up and down very high.
Oh, yeah. And down again. Yeah, no gravity. Yeah. No gravity.
Well, it's a less gravity. Chadwick in California says, Sir Dutch the Dirtiest, while living in Portland, Oregon, I had the absolute pleasure and honor of knowing and working out with the grappler, Len Denton, who in my eyes is one of the most genuine and friendly, as well as knowledgeable talents ever to be in a wrestling ring for multiple territories. Lenny's stories of the business are numerous and informative, and it would seem from past interviews I've seen with JR and others, Lenny seemed to be a less appraised journeyman of the industry. Did you ever work with the grappler, or do you know any other talent that is, was a key piece of wrestling history that should be more well known? So any stories about Len Denton?
Len Denton, that low-life piece of... No, he's really a good guy, good talker, very friendly, very outgoing, and I can see why. And he doesn't meet a stranger, and he's a good talker. And if he's trying to teach you something, you know, he'll teach it, and he doesn't get upset with you. But if you spent time around him, you know, you got to like the guy. And very, very outgoing person. I never had a match with him, but I watched a bunch of his matches, and he knew what he was doing. And he spent a lot of time in Oregon, and he used to tell me, hell, I knew about it much about the Oregon territory just by riding with him than actually being there. Because they called me one time and wanted me to come up there. I went, it's a long way from Atlanta, a long way from Nashville. And I said, I don't know if I want to go. And Stu Hart called me one time, wanted me to come there. And I went, nah, I got to think about this. Too cold. But Len Denton, good guy. I knew him in, where did I know him? I think I knew him from Florida. That's where I knew him from. So I went in the department one night for some reason. I didn't really pal around with him that much. And he had some cash in his billfold. And he opened up a cabinet drawer and threw like a couple $100 bills in there. And it was just money laying around inside the cabinet. And I went, Len, you think you might need to take that money and kind of count it and put it together and put some rubber bands around it? Nah, it's okay. It's okay. Out the door we went. I went, don't. And I was thinking, I hope he doesn't show that to anybody else, because they'd be breaking into that house and taking that money. So, but good guy, and I'm glad you got to know him, because he was very good at what he did.
Apparently, I've heard this before, that Len Denton inadvertently helped Jake Roberts invent the DDT when he like stepped on Jake's like in a front headlock, and then he stepped on Jake's foot, and then they both fell over, and and then Len had the good sense to stay down, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe.
There you go. He was in Mid-South as well for a time. I'm trying to think where else.
Oh, that's where I went into his apartment. It was Mid-South.
I'm trying to think.
That's where it was.
Yes. So it seems, but mostly Portland. He's best remembered.
And his apartment was in Alexandria. And why they picked Alexandria to be I guess it's the central part of the state. But it's a little crappy little town. Well, it's okay, but you were more centralized to, say, Houston or New Orleans. You know, Houston to New Orleans is a pretty good drive, buddy. Mm. It's a hell of a drive. So, but Alexandria, they picked that for the central point, and that's where a lot of the guys stayed, either there or Baton Rouge.
Beardy the Clam has asked.
Who?
Beardy the Clam.
Beardy.
Beardy. Anyway, Beardy the Clam. Just wondering both of your thoughts on the very strange, paralysed Linda McMahon barking Trish Stratus angles, seeing through the lens of February 2024. He says it's very creepy. Now, before we recorded
this
show...
Did you say Linda McMahon?
Linda McMahon was paralysed, catatonic in a wheelchair. Yeah, at this point in the story. Anyway, you watched the very famous interaction between Trish Stratus and Vince McMahon, where Vince forces Trish to do his bidding in the middle of the ring. Before we watch the part, it's too long to put on this, but tell me about what you saw.
Okay, if you disregard, let's take your brain right now, and I want you to push everything out of it that you've heard about Vince lately. Let's look at him under a new set of eyes. This was back in, the early 20s, I would say. And he had Trish Stratus in the ring, and he wanted her to apologize to him for something. And I forgot how it went, but he got her down barking like a dog, which is very demeaning. And then he got her up and then made her pull her bottoms off just to show her panties. Then he got her up and then wanted her to take her bra off. And she went as far as to unsnap it in the back. And listen, if you're going to judge Vince on this, you got to judge the crowd too. The crowd was loving it, because it painted Vince out to be just a no good, sick, perverted bastard. But back in those days, you know, people could say, well, he's not really like that, till we find out, yeah, he's really like that. But if you just watch it and you just disregard everything else, this is the worst time ever to watch this video. Are you going to show any of it?
No, it's just too long.
Okay. But I think Vince, at one time, by doing stuff just like that and taking advantage of Trish Stratus, who the fans loved, he painted himself as the greatest heel of all time. I mean, you really, really, if you think about it, but he was a heel who was entertaining. And if you ever saw him get beat up, you felt good about it. But as far as pure heat, you wanted to slap him. You literally wanted to get up out of your chair and go in that ring and do something physical to him. That's a good heel.
That was an amazing segment. I loved it at the time.
I laughed all the way through.
I still love it. I mean,
and you sick bastard. See how you are?
Yeah, but this has nothing to do with Vince's private life. It is just an amazing segment.
Oh, it has
TV.
To do with James's private life. Oh, I see. No, but it was a good segment.
Yeah.
And nobody turned the channel when that was on. Nobody. No. And I looked at the length of it. It said 13 minutes. For him to hold that crowd, and they were hanging on every word. They didn't know what else he's going to do. They hung on every word, and actually it picked up. It had to pick up viewers. If you're surfing the channel, you'd have remotes by that time. Click, click. There's a half-naked girl standing there and some guy screaming at her. You need to take this off, and you're going to say you're sorry now. And it was actually very good. Very well performed.
Now, there's one, not with the segment itself, but the follow-up, which I know you didn't watch the follow-up, you didn't watch WrestleMania 17 to prepare for this, but do you remember at the time there was a catatonic Linda McMahon who Vince McMahon was drugging or whatever? It was the most bonkers storyline to get to Vince versus Shane.
Anyway, that's the beauty of wrestling. You can tell a story behind the story.
It was great. But the one thing that was an issue was that Trish Stratus has to go through all this humiliation on screen. But then she's not the one who gets any measure of revenge on Vince. It's Linda. Mm-hmm. All Trish does is wheel Linda down, and then she stands up from the wheelchair and kicks Vince in the balls and he loses the match. And it's just the crowd go crazy and everything. It's a great show entirely, and it was a great spectacle, that match as well. But the only thing is that Trish doesn't get a full measure of revenge against Vince in that sense. So there wasn't quite the follow-up.
Did she give him the low kick on the floor or in the ring?
No, Linda. Linda did.
Linda, that's what I mean.
In the ring.
How'd she get in there? Had to row the wheelchair in there.
I think he wheeled her up and then someone carried her in or something. I can't even remember. It was years ago I watched it, but it was brilliant.
Yeah, but it was good. That was good. It really was.
Next one, Chris Legree says, "Hi, Dutch and James. For a few years now, I've been really getting into watching the territories. My favourites being 80s Jim Crockett promotions, and Mid-South Wrestling. I've been watching some Central States wrestling as I'm a big fan of Harley Race. I have a question about another wrestler that was a mainstay there. I've been watching Bulldog Bob Brown. I'm wondering how in the heck did this guy become a wrestling star? I tried watching some of his matches and they stunk. I tried watching his promos and they stunk. He looks like a cross between a walking dumpling and Officer Bar Brady from South Park. Maybe I'm missing something that I don't understand. He makes Jimmy Valiant look like Lou Thesz in comparison. I hate to speak ill will of the deceased, but to me, he just isn't that good. What's your opinion of Bulldog Bob Brown? And Dutch, I'm glad you are recovering from your hospital stay."
Well, I am too. What's this guy's name?
Chris Legree.
Mr. Legree, I agree with you 100%. Bob Brown went there, and I think he became friends with Bob Geigel, the promoter, because he was the type of person that the wrestlers always called the office stooge. Anything that happened in the territory, the boss, he would know. Because Bob Brown would tell him he was awful. He was an awful interview. He was an awful wrestler. He wasn't entertaining. He wasn't funny. And he did look like a little, just a chunky little, I don't know, some doll that you could come up with. But he had no talent at all. And I agree. But he stayed there for years and years and years. I don't really know Bob Brown going anywhere else except the Central States territory. I don't know if he went to, I know he never went to Georgia or Florida or Mid-Atlantic. I don't think he went to Mid-South because those guys, they wouldn't use him. And if he went, it was only for a short time.
I think he may have gone to the AWA. I've seen one match with him, and it was against Giant Baba. It was one giant in-joke to put two of them.
He may have went there on a big show to put Baba over. His co-workers, they didn't much like him. He would try to help them with matches, and people wouldn't even listen to him. They'd go do what they want to do, But I never had much dealings with him. But he wasn't very good. I agree with you. I don't even know how he got in the business. I don't know how he stayed in the business.
He's got
I guess he
hair,
was just around all the time.
What's that Jim Carrey film where he's the police officer and then he's got a split personality? Me, Myself, and I. He's got the same haircut as Jim Carrey in that, if you've ever seen it. You know, the police officer's wedge, where it's just a complete square.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stampede Wrestling, he was in Kansas. What the heck is that place? Canada. He seems to disappear to a bit here and there. Missouri.
I think he was Canadian.
St. Louis.
He just got booked on St. Louis. He would go over there because they were the closest territory to St. Louis, and they would just send their wrestlers over. I don't know why any Memphis wrestlers didn't go there.
It was an NWA stronghold, wasn't it? So Memphis wasn't an NWA territory.
Yeah, but Memphis wasn't anything after a while. They just was on their own separate territory. There were a bunch of outlaws, a bunch of rebels there.
I'm back to 82, Vancouver. Quite a lot of St. Louis, actually, he turns up in. CSW, I don't know what that is. Anyway, we could bore ourselves to death with Bulldog Bob Brown stuff, but we've got a couple more questions, then the big high spot of Ric Flair energy drink at the end. Darren, hello, James and Dutch. Just a couple of questions for you both. Question one, what are your thoughts of Owen Hart doing the sit-down pile driver instead of dropping to his knees like The Undertaker? And number two, what are your thoughts that Owen never checked on Steve Austin afterwards, because he dropped him on his head at SummerSlam 97, even after Brett told Owen he should, and Owen passed away before they made up or at least spoke about it?
Well, it's just a move. I mean, the pile driver, when you just drop to your knees, it's not unique to Taker either. Taker got it somewhere and made it famous. So, and I always liked the knee drop more than just holding them up and sitting on your butt, because it looked better. And as far as Owen not checking on Steve, I don't know. Is that verified that he never called him or anything?
That's what Steve has said, yeah.
Well, did he apologize to him? No.
I don't really think so. I mean, I'm sure maybe, I don't even know straight afterwards. I know that Steve said that, you know, he always found Owen Hart a really funny guy, but he said that after the accident and Owen not apologizing or talking about it or whatever, he found him less funny afterwards.
Yeah, he's not as humorous as he once was. Well, I don't know the story there. I think if he didn't call him, I think he should at least send him something or send it by somebody and say you're sorry.
Like flowers. Sorry I gave you a stinger.
Or do something, send him a case of beer or something. But it wasn't intended. Things like that happened. And I could see Steve. See, when Steve gets something against you, it don't go away the next day. He would remember that for as long as he lives, because he's got a memory like an elephant. You know, they don't forget anything, they say. I don't know. But, yeah, I think Owen should have voiced some concern or said, I'm sorry.
It's just embarrassment. Because he was a very safe worker, mostly, Owen. And then he does this pile driver. He does in Steve's neck. He ends up doing it again on Dan 7, ends up doing his neck in. So, you know, he's sort of 0-2 in the WWF with that move. But, is it just embarrassment? Is it denial? Who knows?
Well, he wanted to do it, but he couldn't do it, I guess. Hey, if somebody wanted to do me that way, I don't think I would have taken that move, because that scares me. I'm a very scareful person.
Scareful.
Yeah, that's a new word I just invented. You can have it, by the way.
I like it.
Scareful. But if, you know, if somebody's never used the move, you know, I'm not gonna volunteer. But you're, again, if I did go up in that move, but your hands are right here. So if you're going down too much, you got to separate yourself. You got to protect yourself too, because you wouldn't put your hands around the legs because your neck's not protected. If you put your hands like this on his knees or his thighs, so if you went to, you think you're going too hard, just push out. Because by the time you've pushed out, you've already, it looks like you've hit and you can bounce out. That's what I would do. I don't think that move's ever been used on me. Probably because of my scareful tactics, maybe. But, and what is it about wrestling that they steal from doctors? Do no harm. So, and there were several moves that I wouldn't take from guys. One guy used to want to do the, you come up and he'll give you that quick power slam. Well, my neck came really close to the mat one time. And I said, okay, that's it. I'm not doing it no more. I didn't do it anymore. Or you could, right when he goes, don't work with him. And so he goes, then he gets a hernia because he can't get you up. You say, well, I told you I wasn't taking it.
That's what, weirdly enough, that's what Owen Hart used to do as well. Just to make Lex Luger look bad. So when Owen was teaming with Davey Boy Smith. Sorry, uh-huh. I'm sorry. Owen was teaming up with Yokozuna maybe or someone. And Lex Luger and British Bulldog were a team. Oh, you'll know because you're the Blue Brothers, the new face, that the Allied Powers at WrestleMania 11 or whatever it was. Anyway, Lex Luger would get him first and Owen would call a military press overhead. And then Owen would deadweight him, like grab onto his arms, and then Lex Luger, oh, yeah. And then Lex Luger would like that, and then, you know, throw him down. And then Lex would tag British Bulldog in, and then Owen would go light as a feather, and Bulldog would be pressing him, just to wind up Lex.
Well, that's the way it's done. Owen was very, very sneaky in that ring too. But hurting somebody is not in Owen's wheelhouse. I never heard of that. But he hurt Austin. Who else did he hurt?
Dan Severn. Dan Severn got away scot-free with that one, but Severn briefly was paralyzed. Very briefly. And he ended up getting feeling back after like a minute or something. But yeah.
I hate to hear that. Yeah. But I was never in their stratosphere. I was like a second match, third match. Owen was above me. He was always like fourth match, fifth match. But neither one of us were in the main event. But I don't think I would take that move.
I don't blame you. Last fan question before we get to the Ric Flair thing. Cody Ruiz. To Dutch and James, my name is Cody Ruiz from Union Grove, Wisconsin. I love the show. Have seen every episode. Thank you. My question is, do you think wrestling has gone a little far by bringing personal lives into the business with what they say and how it's portrayed? An example would be Christian Cage in AEW, I suppose, with the Jungle Boy calling his dad, you know, reminding him that he's dead. And also Drew McIntyre saying, I prayed for CM Punk to get injured. Thank you, too, for all that you do each week, and I love your books, Dutch, We the People. So, do you think personal lives are creeping in too much into the business?
No, I think they could do actually a little more, but they got to watch how personal they get. I think Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart got personal on their main event match, talking about Sonny. Mm-hmm. I think they got really, really personal there. And I don't know how many fans knew what they were talking about, but Brett knew what he was talking about. And Shawn knew what Brett was talking about. So if you're going to get personal with someone, everybody has to kind of have the story. And I don't think everybody had the story. Unless the commentators want to come along behind you and, you know, kind of solidify what you're saying. But yeah, it's always been, you need to get personal a little bit, or you need to involve the fans in a personal episode. And I don't know if it's gotten too personal. Again, I say he can get more personal, because that's when you draw money, when you get it personal. So, of course, the best way, you got to get it personal with the fans first, and then turn it to a specific individual. Now the people hate you. You got to get them disliking you first. If you go in there and they kind of like your BS ways, you got a long ways to go. And I've seen guys go in there to the ring and try to make the people mad, and they loved them. They like them. And they'd say, well, they're not going to boo you. They're not going to buy a ticket and see somebody beat your butt. So we got to make you a baby face. So he turned up to a baby face. I've seen that several times. But yeah, it could get more personal, and that's the way wrestling's always been.
Is it always good practice to pre-agree what you're going to say in an interview if you're going to do a personal one? No?
Well, if you're really going to make a point out of it, he says, and I saw this with Drew McIntyre and Cody and CM Punk on Raw. He said, I think Punk said something about Cody's beat you twice or something. And then I think Drew come back and says, wait a minute, Cody beat you three times straight. And he did. So when you start quoting things that are true and the people can corroborate that what the guy said is true, now they kind of hold the guy talking to a different standard. If you kind of stay within the lines of the truth, you got him. But I don't think I think Drew McIntyre has a way to go before he's really perceived as a big heel. Because I think he came off a babyface run. People kind of liked him. But he was like in that middle part, like he could go either way, but it wouldn't make a big difference. So let's see what the babyface run can do.
We're out of questions, but we've got one more segment to do. Dutch, build it up. What are you about to do?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have promoted this moment for at least a week or more, 10 days maybe.
Maybe
10 days. And we were talking about what brought this up was Ric Flair is with AEW now. And this is called Woo Energy. Woo! Allegedly, it makes you, have a lot of energy. So, and this is a 12-ounce can. And thanks to James, through the magnificence of his heart, he packaged this up. Of course, he ordered it in the United States, and they shipped it to him. It took forever to get here. But they did. It just got here this morning.
Yeah, the delivery people could use a bit of extra energy speeding that one up, couldn't they?
Yeah, I hope, man. Some of them can learn some brain memory, too, because they forget a lot of stuff. But this is the drink. You see Ric Flair's
brain memory.
Yeah. There's Ric Flair. I think a good picture of Ric.
I like the artwork. Nice looking, I'll give him that.
Yeah, nice looking color on the can. And it says sparkling adaptogenic elixir. What the hell is adaptogenic?
It's just a load of bullshit, I think.
Yeah. Dragon fruit, Woo Energy Ric Flair sip. I don't know what that means. Energy and focus mushroom blend.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a mushroom blend energy?
I'm going to. Yeah. I'm going. And this is the first time I waited specifically for this moment to take a drink, and I am going to rate it right here on the show, Ask Dutch Anything.
Let's do it.
So
you don't have any heart conditions, do you?
No, what?
You don't have any heart conditions, do you?
No, I don't have any.
That's good.
Hey, what if I drank this and just fell over?
It'd be good for the ratings. Carry on.
Ready? I'm going to pop it. Pretty good pop. I'll say that. Push that down. Go this back. Now, should I drink it out of the can or drink it out of the cup?
Yeah, drink it out of the can, I think. Well, listen to your heart. I mean, it might be nice to see what color it is.
All right, here we go. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, smell test. Smell test first. What does it smell like to you?
A little elixir-y.
Right.
Kind of a little bit, not bad. Let me see. You can tell a lot about a smell, by the way. But I'm going to do it again. Not bad. I hate to say this, but it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I just made the face just for emotion and, you know, kind of do a little misdirection. Of course, Rick didn't have anything to do with this. Whoever gave him this contract, and I'm glad he's got the contract, because he got a little mad at me a little while back. And But you'll even agree that he started it, right, James?
Well,
he
yeah.
said something about me first.
Yeah, he started by having that awful last match.
Oh, and I said something about it.
Yeah.
And then he had to come back. Then I roasted his ass on Twitter, and then he ended up apologizing. Because when you tell the truth, they have no comeback.
He apologized, and then you apologized, and then the next day you doubled down and went even harder.
Yeah, then he backstabbed me, and then I came back at him. And then finally he stopped. But I will say, Rick, you didn't have anything to do with this, but the drink, really, the Woo drink, especially this, the dragon fruit, is not bad. Of course, it was it's a little strong when you first take it down, but now it's smoothing out, and you get used to it. This is supposed to have, actually, it has no sugar. Let's see what sugar does it have. 6 grams. Is that a lot?
I don't know. Maybe.
It has 30 calories.
So
that's good.
Hey, you know, a moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. So that's good.
Total carbohydrates, 6 grams. Sugar, 6 grams. Niacin, B12 is 120 mcg. I don't even know what that means.
You've got
sodium, potassium.
You've got two more flavors there. Should we save those for future episodes, or is this concept done and dusted now, do you think?
No, actually, I only have one more flavor. Because I got two of these.
Well, there should be six.
No, I didn't get six.
If they screwed me out of it, then.
I got three.
No.
You calling me a liar?
I'm upset that Ric Flair, Woo Energy, screwed me out of half my what I've done.
I got three. Hang on. One second. There's the one.
Yeah. Double make sure, because I'll actually be really annoyed if I've paid for six and only got three.
And that one.
And that's it?
That's it.
Right, well, don't order from the website. They'll fuck you over, because I've paid for six.
Wait a minute. My
deal
here.
Your camera's died off.
It's dead. Follow me over here, damn it. See, it won't work when you want it to. Anyway, I don't know. I'm going to have to get over here now.
Okay, then. Well, do you want to very quickly taste that, and then we'll end this?
It's the same one.
No, that's a yellow one. That's a different taste.
This is strawberry banana. So you're going to have me open two?
Why, do you want to save that for next week? Yeah, open two, damn it. Why not? I don't think we can get any more mileage out of this taste test.
That is not funny. Look at that. It will not change. Oh, there it is. Now, I did this. This is strawberry banana. Well, the first two or three sips, you have to get used to the taste. But it's not bad. It's not bad. So, listen, somebody needs to write to this company and tell them we gave them a review and a favorable review. We need to get loaded up with this stuff, don't you think?
Yeah, but also I want half my money back for only sending three cans instead of six, you money-grubbing twats. I'm not happy at all. Like, genuinely, they screwed me out like $10 there.
Yeah, it was only three. Unless there's another box I didn't see.
Yeah, please, yeah. I'll tell you what, we'll update you on if there's another box before I complain to the website. But
there is another box?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I don't have it here.
Oh, God. Right, well, there may be another box, hopefully. But right, for the sake of my $10. But yeah, Ric Flair Woo Energy should sponsor this. Would that be a conflict of interest?
What's that? That's a pretty good picture of Vince. I mean, Rick.
Do you feel, after drinking two Ric Flair energy drinks, do you feel like more perverted?
Stop it.
Okay.
But I like this one better than this one.
There we go. You said you were going to give it a rating. Give it out of 5 stars, the Meltzer scale.
I would give this one, let's say, a 3.5, 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. This one, just because of the taste, I'm going to give it a 3. It's not bad. I mean, it's passable, but it's not outstanding. So.
There we go. Right, well.
We got it.
An honest taste test there. From
But you laughed at me when this one exploded.
I did enjoy that.
God. You see when I deal with people? This guy, look at it.
I can't almost work under these conditions anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm all hyped up now, drinking all these drugs here. did you put some cocaine in here?
You'd have to ask Rick.
About 10 minutes. I'm off the chain.
Yeah, you need to read the ingredients more, like vitamin B12.
I did. What
mushrooms.
If it said cocaine? 30%. Woo! What the hell?
Cocaine with 6 O's. Right. We are going to call it on that because, if nothing else, I've got a pizza downstairs that I'm going to eat now, so I'm absolutely starving. So thank you very much, everybody, for watching. Once again, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. If you want to submit your pose or your question to the Dirty Dutchman himself, books and certificates and hats and everything can be got to by Dirty Dutchman Tell with 2Ls @gmail.com. Pro Wrestling Tees, Shane Douglas official YouTube channel, and the podcast that comes out every Wednesday. But for now, we'll see you again on Friday with more news, no doubt. We, the people.